From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And today marks 1 year since Hamas invaded Israel, setting off a new cycle of violence in a conflict that's been happening for decades, if not centuries. It began with 1,200 Israelis killed and hundreds more abducted and taken into Gaza. In the years since, the Israeli government has responded by bombing what it says are Hamas targets in Gaza, but which have also left tens of thousands of Palestinian civilians killed. And the war has spread, with Israel fighting the terrorist organization Hezbollah in Lebanon and increasingly drawing Iran out from behind its proxy organizations and into direct conflict with Israel. Here at The 21st Show, we plan to bring you a series of conversations with Illinoisans who've been touched by these events, including Israelis and Palestinians, and now also people of Iranian and Lebanese descent. And in order to give everyone enough time to really be heard, we're spacing these conversations out across a few weeks. Today, we begin by checking in with two Israeli students we first heard from last year in December. Yarden Asher is a grad student in psychology at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Her husband, Stav Asher, is a computer science student, also at Illinois. I spoke with them on Thursday afternoon last week. You'll hear references to last week's fighting in Lebanon, a terror attack in Israel, and Iran's volley of missiles. Because we're on tape, we're not taking calls, but let us know what you think by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Yarden Asher, Stav Asher, welcome back to The 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
It's been 1 year since the attacks. How are you feeling today?
So it's been a rough 48 hours for us specifically. I mean, we can talk about the entirety of last year, which had all sorts of ups and downs, many hard times, but also many times of, you know, the community coming together and us feeling supported. But the 48 last hours have been, or even was it a week? You know, the Middle East is in turmoil. Iran has launched a huge assault against Israel, ballistic missiles and such. Israeli forces have entered Lebanon in an attempt to try and clear out Hezbollah strongholds. And there's a war. People are dying. Our families have spent times in the shelters when the rockets, missiles were fired. There was a ruthless terrorist attack in Tel Aviv. Citizens were murdered. So the last few days have been rough. Overall, as I said, this year, I mean, we've had our rough times. Life does go on, and we try to live it as best as we can, try to be with our loved ones and do whatever we can. It's not been easy.
I think I agree with Stav that now when we're trying to think about how to commemorate October 7th and think about, you know, ceremonies and how to think about all of what happened, it's really hard because none of it actually ended, right? It happened a year ago, but we still have more than 100 hostages. We still have people who are dying, terror attacks, attacks from Iran and from Lebanon and more. And so it's really hard to kind of feel like something ended and we can think about it because it's all still ongoing.
Do you have friends or family who've been either displaced or perhaps they're in the military, they've been called up?
Yes, for both of us. My cousin actually was in Lebanon until I think, 12 hours ago. He's a part of a unit in the army whose designation is to fight in the Lebanese front against Hezbollah forces. And his team did suffer casualties. And so he is fine, thank God. But he went back to Israeli territory, like I said, about 12 hours ago.
Yeah, and I think we both also know people who are displaced either starting a year ago or even starting just a few weeks ago when more of the north has been under attack. Both of our family and friends are employed and are in reserve duty right now.
I also should maybe mention that my cousin, his family is actually from Sderot, which is a city that was mostly evacuated. It was under attack during October 7th. Many people died there. There were fierce battles. And his family was displaced from Sderot.
How do you think of the job that the Israeli government has done in the past year?
I'm definitely biased. I honestly, personally, I don't like the Israeli government. I disapprove of many of their actions. I would like to say that in these sort of things, there's so much hidden, and it's really hard for me as an Israeli because you don't know what intelligence does the Israeli government have. You don't know what they know. You don't know if they know that Hamas have killed some of the hostages, or if Hamas are not actually going to release the hostages, or if they know of, or if secret negotiations are taking place under the table, behind closed doors. You don't know. And I think, regardless of where you're from, you would like to think that you can trust the people who are operating around the negotiation table. You would like to think that your representatives are people you can trust and that they're doing a good job. And obviously, I can't imagine a world where just a normal citizen like me is exposed to this sort of secret and sensitive information. But it is hard for me that I don't know what's going on in the table of negotiations, because I honestly, some of my representatives, some of the ministers in the cabinet, the prime minister, I don't trust them. So it is very hard.
And I wonder if that's something that's as well appreciated among Americans, is how divided many Israelis are about their government and the top leadership in particular.
Yeah, I think it's a weird situation because, as Stav was saying, I think most of our family and friends in Israel, and we as well, we really oppose the government that is sitting right now. And we do a lot about it, right? You see these huge demonstrations in Israel's trying to replace the government, trying to have more elections so we can have a different leadership. But I think here it's very hard because a lot of the times we would get attacked for things that are not necessarily true. And then there's this sort of feeling of how much you need to defend Israel while still, you know, bringing very legitimate criticism on the government, which I think is really important that we all continue to do.
I wonder who you or maybe your friends and family, people in your circle, hold responsible for how this conflict has unfolded in the past year.
I think the main culprit, I mean, the main responsible people, they have to be Hamas. I mean, there's no way around it. I mean, you can say that, you know, there are second-order contributions from the Israeli government that have not done enough to prevent these sort of things. Maybe have not. You can claim that they have not negotiated enough. You can say all sorts of things, but eventually the main responsibility must lie with the terrorist organization that crossed the border and murdered and raped thousands of people, 1,200, and has fired rockets on Israeli citizens for the past 20 years, and continues to claim that their main goal is to basically clear Israel of Jews. They have to bear the responsibility. In my mind, it's as geopolitics go, this is a very complicated issue, and they can say that many actors are involved, but I do hold Hamas responsible. And maybe the second body I hold responsible is Iran. The Iranian proxy war has been going on for quite a while, and I think that we all understand that they are at least to a certain degree involved in all of this war, even more than to a certain degree after having two rounds of missile barrages against Israel. They're more than just behind the scenes, but Hezbollah is Iran, Hamas maybe to a lesser extent, the Houthis in Yemen are Iran. Yeah,
I think it's really important to hold this moral clarity, because I think, you know, we all have very important and just criticism against our government, and we would want them to do a lot of things differently, and we wish that they did a lot of things differently in the past. But I think it is really important for the Western world and to just think about the fact that we are fighting a terrorist organization, a bunch of terrorist organizations, and their sole, I mean, not sole maybe, but that's such a big goal that they have is to eliminate Israel and to eliminate all Jews from Israel and sometimes from the rest of the world. So I think, you know, there's a fine but very important line that lies between criticism that is very important and we should still continue to do so for governments, but democratic governments, and then also just saying terrorist organization is just a whole different world.
You know, it strikes me as in America, the response in the past year has so often focused on the plight of the Palestinian people in Gaza and their struggle for independence and safety. And the last few weeks have really highlighted how this is really, there are broader regional forces at play, which I'm sure you've been well aware of all along. But have you seen that understanding or thinking through this change among Americans that you're around at the university?
So I think that when Israel has entered the Lebanese front, we've definitely seen a shift, mostly online, I think, not so much in campus, but we've definitely seen a shift online in people talking about Lebanon and about the Lebanese people. And I do think that somehow there it's a lot more, I think people understand Israel a lot more when it comes to the Lebanese front, because there's a very clear distinction between the Lebanese people and Hezbollah, which is a terrorist organization which has caused a lot of problems for the Lebanese people. The Lebanese Hezbollah is not the regime in Lebanon in the same way that Hamas is the ruling body over all Palestinians in the Gaza Strip right now. So when Israel attacks specifically Hezbollah fighters, specifically Hezbollah strongholds, specifically Hezbollah leaders, not people who are leaders of, not members of parliament of Lebanon, not people who are just run-of-the-mill Lebanese, I think it's the distinction is a lot more clear-cut. Some people obviously still would like to hold Israel, to find the bad thing, or to see the bad things in everything Israel does, but I do think that overall, the distinction between Hezbollah and Lebanon is a lot more obvious, and so I feel like there has been a lot less criticism in this case.
How do you think of the role of the Biden administration in America, and it's the role that it has led America to take in this conflict?
I'm not really a politician or a political science major. Personally, as an Israeli, I think that the American administration has done a lot for Israel. During the last attack, even and the one previous to it, the U.S. has helped defend citizens in Israel, and we have to understand that this is what I mean. The Israeli citizens are the ones that were targeted, and the U.S. has stood by us. And I honestly feel very grateful for the support of the U.S. And as much as it is a cliche, and as much as it is maybe weird to say, it seems like at least some parts, I mean, of the U.S. think of the United States government as the defender or the leader of the free world. Because we in Israel, I think we would like to see ourselves as part of the Western world, as part of the a long line of Western democracies, which hold humanism dear and act by liberal humanistic rules. And it is very, I mean, to me, it's very encouraging to see that the U.S. government decided to stand by us. I can't really say, again, what is the role of the U.S. in it. And obviously, this is the decision of the American people, not of anyone else. But it's still very, very encouraging to see.
I think we also felt it in the last Iran attack, because it was very clear how much we were relying on Iron Dome to save countless lives. Because, you know, ballistic missiles, just almost 200 missiles were shot at all of the, you know, civilian cities in Israel. And so having this support from the U.S. In operating the Iron Dome, I think, saved so many lives.
Have you been watching the presidential election this year? There's obviously a lot of media devoted to this. I wonder how that looks to you from your perspective.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question because I think a lot of people in Israel watch it and a lot of us watch it here as well. And we know that it's going to be very consequential for us as well, even when we go back to Israel in a year. And I think a lot of people try to think about it as what Stav was saying, as, you know, who do we want as a leader of the free world and the Western world and, you know, the democratic sort of society. But then a lot of people also try to think of, you know, like specifically what it would mean for Israel or what it would mean for Jews in America. And I think people have very differing opinions and also a lot of feelings of kind of being used as scapegoats, right? Of this is such a big political discussion right now. And so each side sort of says, you know, like if you're a Jew, then you need to vote for me because of these reasons. And then the other side says the same thing. And so this kind of feels weird to be in that debate in that way.
All right, we need to take a break. More with Israeli University of Illinois students Stav and Yarden Osher when we return. And once again, a programming note, we are beginning a series of conversations today. We plan to bring you Palestinian perspectives in a future program, likely next week. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Let's get back to my conversation with Stav and Yarden Osher, two Israeli students at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. This is the first in a planned series of conversations with Illinoisans who've been touched by the war in the Middle East. In order to give everyone enough time to really be heard, we're spacing these out across different shows in a few weeks. We plan to bring you Palestinian perspectives next Monday. I taped my conversation with Stav and Yarden last week on Thursday afternoon. Last spring, we saw protesting on college campuses across the United States, including at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. What was your reaction to that?
It was hard. I mean, it was hard enough when it was in other universities, seeing college campuses become so hostile towards Jewish people was extremely hard. And it obviously was very, very disappointing and hard on us when it got, I want to say real, it was always real, but when it hit closer to home, when the encampment started here, it's just that I really can't imagine any sort of scenario like this where a group violates university laws in such a brazen way and calls for violence against police officers and spits in the face of the university's administration. Basically, right, they said, okay, we'll take the encampment and we'll move to next to the Spurlock Museum. And after that, they just said, oh no, we changed our mind. We're just going to the quad again. And they started a new encampment altogether. I can't see a reason why the university would accept such an incursion on you know the everyday life of Jewish and Israeli students on campus. It was hard for me.
Yeah, it felt like we didn't count as much as other minority groups, I think. I mean, the encampment was very clearly citing violence against Jews and Israelis, you know, saying globalized intifada, saying glory to the martyrs, celebrating the resistance of October 7th. And so this is very clearly calling for violence against me and my family and my community. But we still saw this happen without sort of, it wasn't really dealt with, and there were even professors and stuff that joined them, and so this was, it felt very alienating. Yes, thank you. I personally tried to avoid it. I was on the way from my house to the department, and I really didn't want to go through there.
How well do you think the university leadership handled the situation?
I think there were a lot of of ways that they could have handled it better. I think it was tough for them because they did see a lot of other universities where it became much more violent. And so they were definitely trying to avoid that. And so I assume there were a lot of things happening that we didn't necessarily know about where they were trying to solve it peacefully. I think for me specifically, it was really hard that they said, because we got an informal message the first day or two saying that we shouldn't go there, counter protest or do anything like that, and kind of like stay away from the middle of campus. But then we thought that this means that they were going to deal with it in the first few days. And then it just went on and on and on. And it felt like, I don't know, I felt abandoned.
How do you hear you mentioned some of the phrases that you hear people, you know, from ranging from the words like Zionist through, of course, the phrase that everyone talks about is from the river to the sea. When you hear that, what does that mean to you?
So there are many different, right? So there's obviously when people are talking from the river to the sea, I think obviously the way that I interpret it is the way that when I grew up, I mean, it was always a phrase that was being said by people who wanted to clear the area between the river and the sea, meaning all of Israel, clear that region from Jews. So this is what it means to me, and I think that this is the right context for it. There are also all of these sayings like, you know, glory to the martyrs. Martyrs, a lot of them, I mean, obviously martyr could mean a lot of things, but again, in the context of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, martyrs are usually terrorists that have died while killing civilians, while murdering children and just citizens in the streets of Israel. The two terrorists that have committed the attack, what was it, 48 hours ago? They're martyrs. They're considered martyrs. Their families are getting stipends because they were martyred by killing Jews. Stipend from the PLO. And what else? What other phrases? Globalize the Intifada. Obviously, Intifada for us means a bloody conflict, including terrorist attacks against Israeli civilians. And globalize the Intifada means we're coming to get you, even if you're not in Israel. I want to say that even though these phrases are very, they have an aspect of intimidation, and they have an aspect which I think is really, really cruel. I obviously stand by the people. I mean, I stand by the right of people to say them. I don't think that there should be necessarily repercussions for just like a person saying those things or even maybe holding these beliefs. They have the right to think what they want. They have the right to say what they want, again, to the extent that the American law allows it. My problem, I have somewhat of a problem when the university says, we want this campus to be a safe place. We want this campus to be a safe place for people from all religions, all nationalities, all groups. Because the university can say, listen, some of these banners saying globalize the Intifada, from the river to the sea, glory to the martyrs, some of these things we don't want them on our campus, not because they're illegal, just because it affects our student body, it affects the people, this community, and this is what I mean. Yeah,
the university has updated its language on protesting and free speech, and at least as we're recording this late last week, we have not seen the sort of protests this fall that were witnessed in the spring. Do you have a sense that things are changing with the university leadership and how it's handled these issues, where you both have to go about living your lives?
I think we're all very thankful for the change in procedures and just the rules that they have are more clear regarding anti-Semitism on campus. And stuff like that. So I think this is a huge step forward. And I think a lot of Jewish students feel much better about it. But we do see signs all over campus now for calling for a week of basically celebrating the resistance, a year for the resistance, starting tomorrow, I think. I think it was the 5th until the 10th or something.
And just to be clear again, resistance is one of these things that, again, for me, it means the resistance is the way that Hamas refers to themselves and the other militant organizations, terrorist organizations in the West Bank and Gaza. So when they say celebrating the resistance, it means celebrating October 7th. It means celebrating the mass massacre of Israelis, of Jews. And again, it's for me, it's very hard.
In your view, what does the path to peace look like? What to the extent you have them, what aspirations would you have for the Palestinian people?
Me personally, I definitely think that the Palestinian people deserve sovereignty. I think that they deserve much, much, much better than Hamas. I would definitely like to see a Palestinian state in my lifetime. I would love to see the Palestinians live peacefully next to us. And I believe it's not, I mean, it's really hard to predict what will happen in the next 10 years, 20 years. I can't help but feel a little bit hopeful when I see that Hezbollah has been hurt real bad these last few weeks, because I do feel like the Lebanese people are really close to somewhat close to I just want to say that I believe that there is a real possibility of peace between the Lebanese people and Israel, or Lebanon and Israel. I think it's a lot closer than the possibility of having peace with the Palestinians, but this means that it also is possible with the Palestinians, and I think that we can do that, and it does depend on the removal of such leaders such as Hania and Sinwar, the leaders of Hamas, one of which has been killed in Iran.
I agree. I mean, I think it's very clear that, again, in my opinion, but that there needs to be a state for the Palestinian people, that they need to be, you know, they have their own rights, their own sovereignty. And being in a peaceful state between our two states, between Israel and Palestine, I think, is the dream. I think it's what we all are waiting for.
And it's not, I mean, some people think of peace as, you know, hugs and kisses and rainbows. We don't need that. It's not that we don't want that. It's just that I am fine with peace where the Palestinian people, rightfully so, by the way, are still hold grudges, because definitely this has been a very bloody and very, very destructive conflict. I don't expect them to, you know, love Israel and love Jews. I don't expect it. I would definitely settle for just peace, where they get land, they get rights, they get sovereignty, we get peace. I would definitely settle for that, even if they hold grudges, even if they don't like me. I'm definitely fine with. I can definitely understand, definitely understand the grudge, but would still love to see peace, and I do believe it's possible. Again, I think it is a requirement to not have a terrorist organization dedicated for the destruction of Israel and the murder of Jews leading the Palestinian people. If that's the case, I don't see how peace is possible.
We are recording this in the midst of the High Holy Days. What meaning do those hold for you in this context this year?
Yeah, that's a good question, because everyone I know, we keep thinking about what we're supposed to do right now. Are we supposed to celebrate? It's, you know, the holidays are always time where you're happy and you're celebrating with your family and friends, and it feels not appropriate to celebrate when there are still hostages and when there are soldiers risking their lives and losing their lives. So I think a lot of us are having some conflicts about how to feel and about still trying to celebrate what we do have and the community that we have and the relationships that we have that are even more important at this day and age.
I still remember the time when I was a soldier and I was deployed during holidays. The feeling, let's say, on the front, or at least in my unit, was always, I'm here. I might not be having the greatest holiday of my life, but the only reason I'm here is so that my family and friends can live their lives, can live normal lives to some extent. The only reason why I'm here is so that civilians and innocent people will be able to live free of terror. And I'd like to think that, or I know for my, at least for my brothers, for my cousin, that this is also what they think, and this is a very, very common way of thinking in the Israeli army. And I honestly, I love celebrating and enjoying life and not letting the terrorists win, because that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to use terror. I don't think that they can actually vanquish Israel militarily, but if we're just too scared or just too sad to celebrate, too sad to live our lives, I think that's a victory that they can get, and I don't want to give it to them.
On the one hand, I agree completely. On the other hand, we have Rosh Hashanah today, and my parents are in the shelter.
Yeah, that is true.
They're in the bomb shelter for hours now. They've been sleeping there. They hear sirens all day. It feels not connected to reality to go on. And I agree. I want to go on, but it's very hard.
Last question. How has your perspective on being an Israeli, being an Israeli in America, in Illinois, how has that changed in the last year?
I think for me, we both are very glad that we ended up here. We have amazing programs. We really like our advisors and the research that we're doing. I think this was amazing for both of us to come here. For me, the clarity of this last year was that I have to go back to Israel. It's too hard for me to feel the anti-Semitism and the hate. I can't do this for much longer, I don't think. And I realized the importance of Israel, of a place that I can go and be with my people.
I do want to mention that we've definitely been exposed to anti-Semitism and hate, but obviously I don't think that this is the general rule. I don't think of the United States as an anti-Semitic country, completely opposite. I think that the U.S. is the least anti-Semitic country on earth, maybe second to Israel. I think that Jews, American Jews, love their country and are extremely appreciative of the life that they were given. But still, and maybe it's a college campus thing, the people who are loud are very loud, and they go out on the streets and they, you know, they chant and they deface and they have encampments, and it is hard. But overall, again, we live in a building. We have six apartments in our buildings, and one apartment is us. The other five apartments are home to some of the nicest, most kind people that we've ever met. And I don't think of Illinois or the United States or Urbana-Champaign. I don't think of either of these as anti-Semitic or as bad places. Quite the opposite. Still, it is hard because the minority does exist and they have an effect.
Stav Asher, Yarden Asher, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your experience and perspective with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Stav Asher and Yarden Asher are students at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I spoke with them on Thursday afternoon. As I said earlier, this is the first in a series of conversations on the conflict in the Middle East. We're planning to focus on Palestinian perspectives next week. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.